The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Good afternoon and welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is September the 23rd in the year that they say is 2016. It is a Friday afternoon broadcasting from North Carolina in a little small town, outside of a little small town, just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, which much of the nation is focused on the protests in Charlotte. After the killing of a black father, a black husband, by the Charlotte Mecklenburg police slave catchers, new video has been released, leading to more questions than answers. The wife of the victim, that's Keith Lamont Scott, the wife of that victim was recording the entire incident. And I'll just say this, for those that have not seen that video, the video is about a couple of minutes long, and in the video you can hear her telling the slave catchers not to kill her husband, that he has a traumatic brain injury that he suffered from back in 2015 towards the, I think it was November. So he had a traumatic brain injury that he was recovering from, and he was also on medication, which could have explain his confused actions in his interactions with the slave catchers. But the biggest thing that stood out to me, because I pay attention to what goes on in North Carolina, even though I don't come on Black Talk Radio News and talk about it all the time, but I'm paying attention to what's going on in the state that I live in. And you know, Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department has a Facebook profile, also got a Twitter profile. But on their Facebook profile, they have been tweeting out a lot of pictures of CMPD officers interacting with people in the community. There was one story that went viral where you had this young black man who was a young black boy, I should say, a young black boy suffering from some kind of mental problem. I think he had, I can't remember exactly what his issue was, but he had a known medical issue that affects his mental faculties. And so he had wandered off of the school campus, was angry about something and wandered off. And the CMPD officer comes across him in a parking lot, and the CMPD officer just started talking to the young boy like he was a human being, ended up taking him back to school, resolving whatever the issue was. Just totally a professional interaction, and I would say, you know, on appearances, like he cared, like he wasn't out to hurt that young man. Now, so they always posting stuff like that in their interactions with people in the community. and trying to de-escalate situations, but there was no attempt to de-escalate with Mr. Scott. His wife was standing right there. She was begging you, she was pleading with you not to kill her husband, explaining to you his medical issues. At no time was she used to de-escalate the situation. They didn't address her at all. Oh, ma'am, this is your husband. Appears he has a gun. Can you tell us what's going on? Or can you talk to him and get him to speak to us or what have you? And in the video, she disputes that he even has a gun. And now there's speculation that the gun was planted. As you do see, one of the slave catchers dropped something near Mr. Scott's body. Unclear what that was that dropped, but clearly something did drop. And there, I just want to remind you of why people are skeptical, because we've known this all the time, that cops plant evidence, countless stories coming out. And I mean, not just this year, last year, or in recent memory. I'm talking about over decades. We've always known this about some police that will carry throwaway guns, that they'll plant on people and what have you. So we just saw that happen in South Carolina with the killing of Walter Scott. Now, I don't know if Mr. Keith Lamont Scott and Walter Scott were related, but we saw Michael Slager, the cop who has yet to go on trial, I should say former slave catcher, yet to go on trial, and I think he is out on bail for the murder of Mr. Scott in South Carolina. And we saw him plant the taser on the body. And now we got a story coming out of St. Louis, a video showing another cop planting a gun. So let's not act like these people are above board and there is no question that they have all the integrity and they don't do such things, because that's a lie. But again, as I reiterated yesterday, it is not unlawful to carry a weapon. If he had a weapon, which I'm not so sure he did, conflicting reports on that, but if he did, let's accept that he did. He was not in the commission of a crime holding his gun. At no time did I see in that video any kind of what the police call furtive movements. That means sudden movements, you know, like you going for something. No, none of that. None of that was going on. Never saw his arm go up as if he was pointing a weapon at anyone. I didn't see that on that video. And there was a police slave catcher's vehicle that came speeding in that kind of blocked the view. But again, there was no effort to de-escalate. They could have used the man's wife, who was right there begging for his life, to de-escalate that situation. But they did not choose to use her to de-escalate. They choose to use deadly force. And we see this time and time and time again. And this reminded me yesterday of the case here in the county that I live in Gastonia, which I think may be one of the second largest cities in North Carolina. I'm not too sure about that. Maybe Raleigh or Greensboro may be bigger, but Gastonia, it has a nice size population. It's here in Gaston County where I live. And in February of 2015, a 72-year-old black veteran was in his home in Gastonia recovering from some sort of surgery that he had. It might have been open heart surgery or something, and he was well enough that he could go home. And the police calling themselves doing checking up on the welfare of Mr. Allen broke into his home around, it was almost midnight, if I'm not mistaken. I know it was dark outside. They had come to the home before trying to do a welfare check as requested by Mr. Allen's family that lives in another county in North Carolina. Not too close by, that I guess they couldn't, you know, just do a quick drive over to check on their brother. It was his sister who called. And so they couldn't get in touch with him. nobody to come to the door when they came there during a decent time of, you know, day while it was still light outside. So they come back at night and end up busting down his back door. The fire department helped them gain entry, or this one cop gain entry to Mr. Allen's home. Mr. Allen not knowing who's trying to break into his house and who's at the back door. And so reportedly, and all we have is the slave catcher who killed him's testimony or what have you. But he said that Mr. Allen had a gun in his hand, had a little .22 in his hand. No time did I hear that Mr. Allen pointed the gun at this cop. But if he did, he was in his own house defending himself from an unknown intruder. Now, again, I am under no illusions. The Supreme Court in 2005 ruled that the police job is not to serve and protect. So people should stop using that. The Supreme Court, in a court case of slave catchers being sued for violating somebody's rights or not protecting somebody's rights, and the Supreme Court said it is not their job to protect and serve citizens. That's not their job. So what are we left with then if serving and protecting citizens isn't their job? Is it profiling and killing? Because we seem to see a whole lot of that. So this slave catcher guns down Mr. Allen in his own home. Again, this 72-year-old man. And no release or any kind of video. I don't know if this cop had on body camera. So all we have is the slave catcher's word. But even at his word, he was not justified. You broke in a man's house. I don't care if you call yourself trying to help. You were supposed to take one for the team if he was going to shoot you for breaking in his house, because he was well within his constitutional rights. And not just, again, you know, our rights aren't limited to a piece of paper, but he was well within his human rights to defend his home, to defend his property from people breaking in during the night. And so I heard today during the press conference, one of the press conferences of the CMPD police chief, I don't recall his name right now. He hasn't been there long. He replaced Rodney Monroe, who was the last police chief. But he mentioned that he will not be given any more updates on the killing of Keith Lamont Scott, because the investigation has been totally turned over to the state SBI. That's the State Bureau of Investigation. So it's supposed to be a totally independent investigation. And so while some people will see that as a good sign, as, you know, they're trying to be objective and they don't want to investigate themselves, so they're going to bring in some other police, some other law enforcement to investigate their brothers and sisters in uniform and what have you. But I would say that right there, you could be looking at another year or two, because I have not seen, not found any indication that the SBI investigation in the killing of James Allen, Mr. James Allen, in Gastonia has concluded. And the SBI announced that investigation, that they were taking it over in February of 2015, shortly after he's killed. So it's been over a year now, and I have found no information. And I actually called the SBI office that would be in charge over this district to investigate that. And I'll let you listen in on the call a little bit later. But I just wanted to say that I am just reminded of Mr. Allen's murder. I ain't gonna call it murder. I don't think it was premeditated murder or what have you. I don't think he meant to kill the man when he went in there. I don't know. But I know that his killing was not justified, and that this is a pattern that we often see, where these slave catchers get death duty for a year or so, and sometimes often put right back on the street during the investigation, and we just forget about it because it's on to the next case. It's always somebody getting murdered by police in this country. So I called them today. I will share that audio with you. It does not instill any confidence in me whatsoever that the FBI has taken over this investigation, because North Carolina has a lot of institutional problems. I found the video of the press conference I mentioned yesterday. I wanted to play it yesterday, but I'll play it today. I thought that the NAACP here in North Carolina and the other organizations that are working with the NAACP and has always been working on these issues, the NAACP in North Carolina, I know the NAACP has gotten a bad rap, and in a lot of cases it was earned, but I'm not going to say that about North Carolina NAACP. I think that they have a lot of competent leadership, unfortunately not here in the branch that's in my county, but for the most part their state leadership is good. Corinne Mack, the chapter leader in Charlotte, North Carolina, I think she's very knowledgeable and committed to issues of justice and equality. And so I'm not going to badmouth the NAACP, and I'm not going to allow anybody from outside the state to call in or come at me and you know, talk about, oh, the NAACP been this or that. Okay, that may have been true in certain cases in the past or whatnot, but I'm speaking on the people in this state, which the NAACP has the largest membership base here in North Carolina. And I guess that's only fitting that that organization has the largest membership base in the nation, in this state. I guess that's fitting since North Carolina is historically known for having the most card-carrying members of the Ku Klux Klan in this state. I thought it was a very excellent press conference, particularly the language that Mr. Barber used, Reverend Barber, who is the leader of the North Carolina State NAACP. I think he was very codified. I have mentioned before, I think he has a lot of skill in getting people who don't look like him to care about issues in the state, and not only care about those issues, but mobilize. All right. And so I definitely want to play that, because he addresses a number of issues, things that I've talked about in the past, other people have talked about in the past, but he also addresses some of the misinformation that you're getting in mainstream media and right-wing blogs and what have you about the nature of the protests. Already you had a state representative. I'm telling y'all, these are some of the most racist crackers I have ever known to occupy public office here in North Carolina. I mean, they are racist. And it's not just because you're saying they're racist, it's because they've shown that they're racist. The courts have ruled that they're racist with the recent Supreme Court decision that said that they use surgical precision to disenfranchise black voters in the state. So again, I know there are some people who don't think that voting matters. I would say that especially on the national level, in the terms of the federal government, the evidence would suggest that they're right. But I think there's also evidence can be shown that voting matters on the local level and a state level, because North Carolina was trying to make some progress prior to 2010 when lots of racist suspects was motivated to turn out during the midterm elections to take away Barack Obama's Democratic majority, and the people who voted for Obama didn't turn out. And that's how they took over. And see, again, we be mostly focusing on, and I'm talking about most people, we focus on the federal elections, But at the same time, we don't even know what's going on with the state elections. Like my mom had asked me this morning, she said, can you find me something that tells me every political office in the state and who these people that are, list the people that are running for office in the state, so I can start doing my research on these people and what have you. So it's not about Trump. It's not about Hillary Clinton. If you're here in the state of North Carolina, your primary reason for turning out to vote in November is to get these racist cracker GOP Nazis out of power. Because absolutely what they are doing is having a direct impact on us. You can say that you don't participate in the system and you live outside the system and you don't, you know, address any of that because you don't believe in. That's all well and fine. But if I'm paying taxes and our family pays, I feel like way too much in property taxes. We spend money here in the state. We pay sales taxes and what have you. And I'm just not going to be giving my money to something and then I'm not going to be served properly by it. Okay? Time out for that. Because you are not expressing free will when you allow them to freely take your money to do the unjust things that they're doing and to maintain this system. So you got to do something, and just withdrawing from it ain't going to change it. It's not going to change it. Again, these people in this state have put racist laws on the books. Fortunately, they got taken off because they proved to be unconstitutional, had to fight it in the courts. But, you know, they're not going to stop. They're going to keep on. And so I feel like it's a mistake for anyone in this state that believes in justice, that call themselves countering racism, to sit back and allow these racists to remain in power when they have shown themselves to be enemies of the people and have not only used racist rhetoric and what have you, but they have passed racist legislation that has a direct impact on us. So I don't care to hear anything about why you don't vote. That's you. I'm imploring all North Carolinians to turn out to vote, primarily to get these racists out of the North Carolina legislature. Okay? So, before I get into the main topics of the day, there is just some other news stories that I want to share. But again, I do want to point to the killing of the U.S. veteran, Army veteran, 72-year-old James Allen, who was murdered in his own home. I shouldn't say murdered. I don't like to be like other people and exaggerate things. In the very least, it was manslaughter. Shouldn't have broke in the man's house and entered his home. You should have broke the door and called and kept calling and kept calling for somebody to come to the door, or waited for a family member to drive down and say, look, nobody's answering the door. We don't want to break in. We don't want, you know, so you're going to have to come down. You're going to have to come down. Or you send, if you're fearing for this man, send the first responders in. Why did you send an armed slave catcher in first if you was going there to check on the welfare of Mr. Allen? Should have been the paramedics communicating with Mr. Allen. So again, this just keeps happening over and over and over, and people are going to do whatever they feel like is necessary. It may not always be constructive in your mind, and it may not be constructive, but they are doing whatever they feel they need to do to fight this system of this corrupt system that devalues human life, that puts property values over that of the proper owner's life. And again, you know, these people out here trying, and then you knew it was going to come, and not just white racists who are conservatives, but black conservatives as well, calling Mr. Lamont Jenkins, Keith Lamont Scott a thug, and we knew it was coming. They used the same old talking points. They haven't come up with anything new. But see, Mr. Scott doesn't fall into the stereotype that they like to make about black men. Here was a black man married to a black woman with black children who cared, obviously, about his children, their education. The neighbor said he was out there every day to get his child off the bus. See, he don't fit that stereotype, but that don't stop the people who aren't interested in the truth and just want a victim blame regardless. Nobody talking about Second Amendment rights and all, except me. So those are the things. If you have any questions or comments, any observations you would like to share, you can give us a call at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. Hit *6 and 1 to comment on air. The studio line is 704-951-5030. One of the stories I want to share with you before we take our first break and then get into the main topics, because I definitely want to let you hear that press conference, which is about an hour long. Let's see. This is coming to you from St. Louis. St. Louis cop plants gun after killing black victim. This was published on TellUsSirTV.net. It was published, what's the date on this? Yesterday, no, not yesterday, September the 20th. The video comes amid outrage over excessive force used by police after the killing of hundreds of unarmed black people over the past 2 years. A new video released Tuesday of a 2011 police shooting of a black man shows the white police officer responsible for the killing planting a gun at the crime scene. A former St. Louis police officer was charged on May the 16th. So I'm assuming that's only this year. I mean, was it this year or in 2011? So anyway, he was charged for killing a black male following a car chase. The video comes amid outrage over excessive force used by police after the killing of hundreds of unarmed black people, mostly men, have triggered protests across the United States over the past 2 years. Jason Stockley, who is white, shot into Anthony Lamar Smith's car on December 11th, sparking a high-speed chase. So he was trying to flee from the slave catcher trying to kill him. Stockley was a passenger in the police SUV that chased the 24-year-old Smith at speeds reaching 80 miles per hour, according to the prosecutor's investigation. Stokely's vehicle crashed, and when they began the pursuit again, he can be heard through an internal police car video saying, "He is going to kill this mother effer. Don't you know it?" That's according to prosecutors. Now, prosecutors at the time did not criminally charge Stockley, who left the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department in 2013. So again, years. These people get desk duty, or they get to keep their job for years while, quote unquote, under investigation for murdering somebody. And then to top it off, they be having the video. They have the video. So he stayed there an additional 2 years. Additional evidence uncovered by a police department and FBI investigation was provided to prosecutors in March and led to Monday's charges. So it looks like they might have just charged this guy just now. 5 years later? Wow. See, this is what I'm talking about. But whenever, and I'm speaking to the black conservatives out there that want to put out these things about, well, why, where are all the protests when a black person gets killed by another black person? Like, I mean, really. What, you don't have to protest to get a black person arrested for a crime. They looking to do that anyway. So it's just a stupid, asinine question. We don't have to protest. And one of the protesters allegedly killed by another person out there, although we're getting conflicting reports from Charlotte that a cop may have been involved. Several witnesses say it was a cop. Other witnesses say it was the person that they quickly arrested, that they said they used video evidence and witnesses. In less than 24 hours, a black man is charged for killing, allegedly, another black person. So the whole black on black crime thing narrative, it holds no water. Because blacks who do crime are held accountable. And even those who don't commit the crime are held accountable. As the NAACP pointed out, you got a number of people in North Carolina been in prison for 20 years, and they know that these men did not commit the crimes. We keep seeing all these innocent people getting out. So here you got another slave catcher planting a weapon on somebody. So again, they could come out with a video showing a weapon on the ground. I don't care. They plant weapons. Again, this killing was unjustified. Mr. Scott was not in the commission of any crime. They had no cause to stop and question, according to a court case out of North Carolina. Simply being armed, it's not probable cause to stop and question citizens. I'm going to take a station identification break, and when we come back, I want to play this call for you to the SBI. I did not edit it, so you know you're going to hear a little pauses in it, because I'm not gonna edit it. Just a little short recording I made of my inquiry today with the SBI about the investigation into the killing of another black man with a gun in his hand, who was totally within his rights to have a gun in his hand, especially when he was defending his home from an intruder. So it's just been over a year going on. In next February, with the way time going by so fast, now before you know it, it'll be 2 years. And I want to know, what's the status of this investigation? Because now that the SBI has taken over Mr. Scott's case, the investigation, well, I don't think people want to wait 2 years when we see that it don't even take you 24 hours to charge a black person who has committed crimes. To investigate, charge, arrest, prosecute. Lightning fast. But when it comes to these cops killing somebody, oh, the investigation is moving like molasses in the winter. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. from the state of North Carolina. We'll be back on the other side.
The Black Talk Media Project funds the use of new media technology in efforts to restore independent black voices to the myriad of issues affecting Afro-descendant people all over the planet. If media can control the minds of the masses, as Malcolm X once said, then you must ask yourself, who is in control of the media targeting the masses of black people today. Help bring back independence, self-determination, and respect for black culture in the production of global media by joining the effort to crowdfund new black media for the new millennium. Visit blacktalkmediaproject.org for more information on how you can invest in public black radio for the masses.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, if you have any questions or comments, the conference line is 614. Let me pull it up because I didn't forgot it. 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-pound. Hit star 6-1 if you'd like to come in on air. The studio line is 704-951-5030. Again, that's 704-951-5030. The Tulsa police officer who killed Terrence Crutcher, we all saw it on video. Again, and this is I have to commend them for moving at a pretty quick pace to charge this officer. So again, you know, these things do not have to take a year, 2 years, 3 years, and we keep finding that to be the case. But then we'll see investigations like these where they had a video evidence and it don't take them long to move the charge. That's all people are asking for, transparency and accountability. That's all. Is that too much to ask for? Is that too much for quote-unquote Americans to ask for in this country? Is that too much? That's all they asking for. So this Betty Jo Shelby, the Tulsa slave catcher, I don't know if they fired her yet, but she has been charged with manslaughter. And I saw some other stuff. I'm trying to find it now. But people have been digging in her background. You know, like how they always dig into the background of a dead black man. But you notice they ain't doing that with Mr. Scott, is they? Again, he don't fit their stereotype. Here is a man, married, black father, in the home. And they don't fit their stereotype. So that's why you're not hearing anything about he had a record or what have you. But anyway, you got people digging into the records of this Tulsa police officer, Betty Jo Shelby, slave catcher, and they're saying that she's had issues in the past. Let me see if I could find one of those. Betty Jo Shelby might have had a drug problem in the past. And remember, this is a woman who they have just sent to some kind of class on how to recognize people who are on drugs. And I guess the training is, if you see somebody and you think they're on PCP, shoot them and kill them. So it appears though that she may have had, let me pull this up from MSNBC News. Tulsa cop Betty Shelby's past under scrutiny after Terrence Crutcher shooting. The life and career of the Oklahoma police officer who fatally shot an unarmed black man last week is now under a microscope. Tulsa police officer Betty Shelby, a 5-year veteran of the force, has been charged with manslaughter for fatally shooting 40-year-old Terrence Crutcher on a highway. Cameras captured it. Okay, get to the part about her background. Let's see, saying that a vial of PCP was found in the SUV. Again, if they plant guns, they plant drugs too. I don't see anything pointing to, let's see, in addition, Shelby was also armed with a stun gun, but reached for her gun, the Associated Press reported. Shelby is a drug recognition expert and had admitted to previously using marijuana. Before she joined the Tulsa Police in 2011, Shelby was a deputy for the Tulsa County Sheriff's Office. In her 2007 application, which was publicly disclosed Monday, she circled yes when asked whether she had possessed or use illegal drugs in her past. But she certainly didn't have a problem being a slave catcher and putting people in prison for using their free will to consume whatever substances they are consuming instead of helping people who have substance abuse problems. Well, this is, you see how she treated a man that she thought was on PCP. She said he looked like he was on PCP. She killed him. It ain't to help nobody. So, good to see that, and let's hope that we get a conviction out of this. All right, so moving on. Let me pull up, for those that don't know, let me pull up this story about Mr. Allen, because it's very similar in my mind to the story about the killing of Mr. Scott. So, good to see that. Okay, sorry about that. Needed to get to this page. Let's see. Mr. Allen was killed in February of 2015. I linked to one of the local radio stations, ABC affiliate. And this is from February the 8th, 2015. The title of the article is SBI Investigating After Officer Shot and Killed Army Vet Holding Gun. This is his sister who doesn't live in the county.
Right.
Who had earlier called for, I'm trying to back this video up, who earlier called for them to do a welfare check on her brother, telling them he had been in the hospital, had surgery, and lived alone, and they couldn't reach him on the cell phone, and they need somebody to check on him. So anyway, let me continue. Family members got their first look inside a Gastonia home Monday after a police officer shot and killed an armed 74-year-old Army veteran inside. Channel 9 found court documents that show firefighters forced James Allen's door open Saturday night during a welfare check. The police chief said an officer fired his weapon after Allen pointed a gun at him. Family members said they are devastated by what happened. I think that he probably thought somebody was breaking in his house and robbing him or something, said the victim's sister, Mary Battle. She is in disbelief over the shooting. She said her brother, who fought in the Korean War, was recovering from heart surgery. Police said they went to the home to do a welfare check after relatives in Anson County alerted the authorities there. Okay. Now, on that Saturday, it's saying that they had came to his house twice and didn't get an answer. So they came there late at night, broke open the door. Why would you do that at night when the lights would be off? Nobody can see you. You know, it just doesn't make any logical sense. And why are you breaking in the back door? That's where thieves come in, right? Through the back door, so nobody can see them breaking in from the street. So this man had every logical reason to believe, well, someone did break into his house, didn't they? So he was not mistaken. You broke into his house. And instead of de-escalating the situation, you shot this man in his own home. And it don't matter to me whether he had a gun or not. You supposed to be so brave, and you're wearing, you know, your body armor and what have you. Chances are you gonna survive. If he had shot you for breaking in his house, you're supposed to take one for the team, but that ain't what he did. He feared for his life. Again, they are not out here to protect and serve us, okay? All of that is a myth. It is all propaganda. And I'm not demonizing all cops, because to be, as I'm always real with you all, I have had only one problem with a cop since I've been living in North Carolina. All the other cops I've had interaction with, except for this one cop who didn't like me filming him, as they had pulled a car over and pulled up into the church parking lot next door, and I was filming that, and one of the cops apparently didn't like me exercising my First Amendment right to film him doing his job in my community. And he tried to be intimidating and all of that, and asked me, well, he ain't had no reason to say nothing to me. I'm on my back porch. Nothing. But other than that, every cop I have had an interaction with has been professional. And they didn't always seek to write me a ticket. I remember even being in Charlotte one time, driving in a van we had just purchased, a used van, that turned out to have some electrical problems with the lights. And this cop pulled me over. I was leaving a pool hall in Charlotte. He pulls me over, comes up to the car, white cop. I say, he asked me how I'm doing. I said, I'm okay. I asked why you pulled me over. He was like, your tail lights are out. I was like, wow, we just bought this doggone van too. I said, can I get out the car, see, go back there, see what's going on with that? He was like, sure. I see that the lights is out. He asks me, where is the car registered? I tell him, give him the address, all that. And he was like, just drive home with your blinkers on. So I'm not on here to demonize all cops like the media tries to demonize all the victims of killer cops. But when we do have these instances where it appears by the evidence that these cops are killing people and not being held accountable and given death duty, we cannot tolerate that. We cannot tolerate it. And we need to do whatever is necessary to bring about justice in this state. Make justice the rule of law, not injustice. So I called the SBI, which took over the investigation. They have different offices for different districts. So I called the Southern Piedmont branch, and this is what I found out.
Thank you for calling the SBI. Help me help you.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm a blogger here in North Carolina. I live in Gaston County. And I was just covering the case that's going on in Charlotte, and I understand the SBI is taking over that case, but it just reminded me of a case from 2015 that the SBI took over, the case of James Allen, 74-year-old veteran that was shot and killed in his home by a Gastonia police officer. I can't find no news reports or anything to give me a status on that investigation, if it's concluded, if it's still open, and I'm just trying to get some information.
All right, hold on just 1 second, please.
Yes, ma'am. Now, she puts me on hold, and I hear, these beeps, and I was on hold for about a minute or so. So I imagine she was trying to find out the information. She should be coming. Let me just fast forward.
At the moment, I'm... Sir, thank you for holding. Sorry, but at the moment, I'm unable to access our system and see who the agent would be that would be assigned to that case.
Yes, ma'am.
So that would be the person you would need to speak with, and our system is down right now for some maintenance.
So do you know as much as, and I appreciate that information, but do you know if the case is still active or if it's
closed?
I
don't know. I would have to look in the system, and I have no way of knowing.
Okay. So is it okay if I give you a call back to find out that information?
Sure. It may be Monday before the system's back up. I'm not sure how long it's going to be down.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. You've been helpful.
All right. You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So she said the system was down. So I'm going to give them a call. I'm going to wait till Monday. I will give them a call. I don't know. She said it was down for maintenance and what have you. I have no reason to believe she's lying or anything like that. And it just also, the other question that came to my mind is, how many cases are they investigating that involves a police officer killing a citizen? Does that, is that office handling that many cases that people in the office aren't aware of any investigations of police-involved shootings? So again, I don't know. I'm not suggesting that the woman's lying or anything like that, but we will give them a call back Monday because I want to know the status of the investigation into the police killing of black U.S. veteran James Allen. And by the way, you know, I hear all these people talking about how they support the troops and all this and that, and veterans are among some of the most mistreated people in this country. Y'all just be saying that. Y'all don't care about veterans. This man then fought for his country to only be murdered in his retirement years by a slave catcher in his own home. Again, I don't mean to say murder, but killed. Now, I want to transition. Oh, I do see we have a call before we get into this press conference, which I thought was excellent by Reverend Barber, who is the North Carolina state leader of the NAACP. Before we get into that, let me check the phone line, and I see we do have a caller. Area code 754, you're on Black Talk Radio News. Go ahead with your question and comment.
Hey, 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 what's going on, Scotty? It's Central South Florida checking in.
Just keeping my eye on things.
I know that's right, and I thank you for it, brother. Like I said, man, just wanted to call in, check in, say what's up to you, and commend you on the job, and just say you keep pressing on, man. You, to all us warriors out here, you giving us status quo, you know what I'm saying? You keeping us in the loop. So just keep doing what you're doing, bro. I know it gets discouraging, man. I know it do. But keep doing what you're doing, Scott.
All right. I appreciate that, Sin, and y'all brothers out there, brothers and sisters out there. Y'all just keep doing what y'all doing,
too. Q&A queue is cleared.
Because I'm telling you, y'all are really inspiring me by not being fooled with the status quo and what have you. So I'm very inspired by our young people out there today. So I want to get into this press conference that the NAACP had yesterday. And I will warn you that the NAACP in this state, I don't know if this is on purpose. I don't know if this is some kind of tactic or strategy to disarm the racists. Again, we already got state representatives trying to portray the Charlotte protests as black people hating police. Totally ignoring all of the Hispanic people out there, all the white people out there, all the Asian people out there, just it's just citizens. North Carolina citizens of diverse backgrounds are out there protesting this killing, which may be a murder. I don't know, but it just based off the evidence, certainly doesn't look like it was justified killing Mr. Scott. But the narrative, see, they want to make it about race. And it is about race when we're talking about the systemic and institutional racism. But you'll even hear Dr. Barber say, don't get confused because the cop is black. Don't be confused and say, oh, it can't be racism or anything. But they use language here in the state where they refer to white people that they work with as brothers and sisters. Now, I know there are some black people among us who just look at all white people as being the enemy. So, again, be forewarned. And to be honest with you, I ain't got a problem with them saying that. This is indeed a diverse justice movement in this state, and it didn't just start now. It's been a justice movement since 2010. People of all diverse backgrounds and classifications who have identified that these racist Republicans got to go. They looking to harm everyone. So just take that when you hear any other NAACP talk about that. Hey, they got some of the people they work with is standing right there next to them, white people and what have you. I ain't got a problem with it. Hey, that's the language they want to use to describe the people that they are working with to address these issues. I ain't got a problem with it. But I think it is important that we do not become confused. And I have to keep pointing to Mr. Fuller, who I'm not always in agreement with, but I'm not always in agreement with anyone. But I still think that he got to the bare bones of it when he said it's about justice versus non-justice, not black versus white. It's about justice versus non-justice. Did this person commit an injustice against another person? The slave catcher being black shouldn't matter, and the victim being black shouldn't matter. Now, when we do talk about racism, we should be talking about the institutional racism, the systemic racial outcomes from public policy. Nothing wrong with pointing it out, but at the same time, just know that all skin folk ain't your kin folk. Some people are not interested in justice. They just interested in what they can create for themselves in the system as is. I don't get that from any of the leaders that I have met, come across. Some of the press conferences I've attended here in the state, I don't get that from these leaders here. And I'm talking about the grassroots leaders. And I would consider the NAACP a grassroots organization in this state. I can't speak on other states in this state. So just want to forewarn you about that. But I'm going to shut up now and let you listen to this press conference in its entirety. I may cut it off because I'm really only interested in hearing from Reverend Barber and Corinne Mack, who is the Charlotte representative for the NAACP. And I have reached out to her, hope to have her on next week. All right, so let me go to this press conference. Should be starting up any moment. And I have linked to this video if you want to view it for yourself or share it with others.
Want to thank you all in the media for coming today. There's a scripture that says God is a very present help in the time of trouble. And then there's another scripture that says in the New Testament that somehow all things work together for good, those who love the Lord and been called according to God's purposes. And then there are words from Jesus that says, only the truth will set us free. I'm Reverend Dr. William J. Barber, the president of the North Carolina Conference of Branches, more than 100 branches of NAACP, but I'm also a local pastor. But I'm here at the invitation of the local leadership and the clergy here to be supportive of the work that they're doing in Charlotte right now. And today, you will hear from the Reverend Robin Tanner. You will hear from Minister Corinne Mack, who is our local president. Hear from the Reverend Dr. Peter Weary, who is the pastor of this congregation. And you will hear from the Reverend Dr. Sadler. On behalf of these clergy who've been in the street, that's the first narrative we want to correct. These clergy have been industry identifiable, and we will hear their stories as they have been working in this community, not just this week, but for many weeks. We also want to be clear that as people of faith, Jewish, Christian, and Muslim, come on, let's back. There is a great tradition of supporting righteous, justice-seeking, nonviolent protest, which is rooted in legitimate discontent and pain over social injustices. And this is what the overwhelming majority of the protesters, young and old, black and white and Latino, and people of different faiths and some not of faith, but who believe in the deep moral precepts of our Constitution, have been engaged in. And we challenge the media not to make the narrative about a few provocateurs who have chosen to meet hate with hate, or to go in a way that is counter what the overwhelming majority. I listened to these leaders who've been in the street. I wanted to listen to the folks who've been there.
That's right.
You're going to hear from people who've been tear gassed.
That's right.
Clergy. And they said to me that while there were maybe a couple of thousand people engaged in righteous, nonviolent, justice-seeking protests, there was just a dozen or a couple of dozen engaged. And we have to make sure there's a responsibility of the media and others not to make this something that is not. We even talked about how oftentimes if an African-American or a person that's black or brown does something, it gets way overblown. And we need the narrative to be right. And that's what we're going to do today. There are rumors that need to be dealt with. There are some facts that you need to know. And I want to also say that these clergy that you see standing here, along with our local president of the NAACP and exec committee, have already won some significant victories on behalf of justice. And I want to say that because it's not necessary to helicopter prophets and helicopter leadership into a city when it's already there.
That's right.
And I want to call on you all as media to talk to these folk. Meetings, some of them until, 2 o'clock in the morning, pressing upon Philly. They have already warned that there will not be a curfew.
Amen. Right.
They were arguing for this last night. And there will not be militarization of this city because of a few. We're a state where we have seen people over championship games, bonfire and turnover cars.
That's right.
We didn't create a military state. We dealt with that issue. In fact, sometimes people were quadrant off. Secondly, they have won this group of clergy all here, and they're pushing that there will be, and they pushed the prosecutor to ask for, and we understand it has been asked for, an independent FBI investigation of what is going on. Now, you're going to hear something else from Dr. Weary about another type of investigation. I'll let him talk about that in a moment. We all stand here today, and I came to let the local president and others know of our deep support we have provided to her and these pastors, attorneys that will be advising them as we move forward, and other staff persons on the ground. Our regional coordinator, where is he? Kevin Miles, who covers 7 states and has worked in numerous state cities, is here on the ground to support the local leadership. But we all stand together declaring there must be transparency and the videos must be released.
Amen.
And there needs to be a federal standard in these issues.
Yes.
That those videos in these kinds of instances are released. Truth is what leads to trust, transparency. Now, I want to make a macro statement because it also is critical that we understand the context. And then I'm going to call on Reverend Tanner, Reverend Mack, Reverend Dr. Weary, and then Reverend Sadler will close us, and then we will take questions from the media. Just before 4 p.m. on Tuesday, September the 20th, a Charlotte police officer shot and killed Keith Lamont. That's not disputed. Outside of Scott's parked car. Now, eyewitness and police reports do not agree on who the officer was, whether Scott was holding a book or a gun, or what exchange took place between the officers and Scott before lethal force was used. There is a great deal of things we do not know. There are three possibilities. One, an unarmed black man was shot and the police, black and white, conspired to plant a gun. We don't know if that's true or not, but that's a possibility. The second possibility is that a black man with a legal right to carry a gun had a gun and was shot by the police. There's a third possible scenario. A black man with a gun, brandished it at the police, did not obey orders and was shot. We don't know what is true at this point, which is why uniting these clergy and leaders are demanding that the videos be released. Also, to complicate the concern about this matter, the officer was black, allegedly, and the victim was black. And that complicates sometimes how we talk about race and systemic issues. But at this point, there is speculation because the videos have not been released. So there are a lot of things we don't know. But be clear, and they will help articulate this, that there is unrest in Charlotte and across America because of what we do know. What we do know. We do know that we live in a country now where elected officials at the highest level flame racial and religious tensions. We do know that. We do know that when there is legitimate discontent about police misconduct, there are some for political expediency that will make the issue about black people versus the police rather than what it actually is, black, white, Latino, and other people, clearly against police misconduct and police brutality, which should be a legitimate concern for all Americans. We do know that there has not been a video released, and because of that, all kinds of rumors, and Reverend Mack will speak to that, can exist. And we do know that we live in a state where the governor just signed a bill that will go into effect in October that actually will hold back video from being released, which will continue to exacerbate situations like this. We do know that 3 years ago, a Charlotte officer shot and killed Jonathan Ferrell. We know that. An unarmed black man, black college student, who was asking for help after his car broke down. The movement for black lives and the movement here and young people, the state chapter, the local chapter, insisted on due process. The case went to trial, but ended in a hung jury, and our requests for a retrial have not been honored. Mm-hmm. And we do know that until there are prosecutions and convictions and incarceration for when police engage in unjustified killings, we will continue to have unrest in Charlotte and in America. There's unrest in Charlotte, North Carolina, because of what we know. We know that the law as it is written cannot protect us from police violence. We know. We know about Daryl Hunt and Henry McCullen in this state, two in a long list of African Americans in this state who were wrongfully convicted by this state to death. And many of them are not ancient cases. We know about Dante Shaw and Kevin Michael Smith, two African Americans in North Carolina right now that have been in jail for nearly 20 years for murders they did not commit, crimes they did not commit. That's the state we live in. We do know we live in a state where the crime lab was found guilty of falsely using and abusing evidence in hundreds of cases. We know our criminal justice system does not function to protect black life or poor life, but too often to control it. This is what we know. There is unrest in Charlotte and across America because we know that since the Supreme Court upheld a lower court's ruling on August 31st, declaring that Governor McCrory, former mayor of Charlotte, targeted African Americans with almost surgical precision when he signed a 2013 voter suppression bill. And even when the highest court in the land declared it intentional, Governor McCrory did not back down or apologize. And his party chairman doubled down by trying to use the State Board of Election to limit the number of polling places in African America where African Americans like to vote. You say, well, what does this have to do with crime and the concern against police brutality? If you take away from people the right to vote and the opportunity to vote to elect their leaders, then you're going to have outcry. Because DAs are elected. Police chiefs are hired by people who are elected. The Attorney General is elected. We do know that despite the fact that it would benefit more poor white people than African Americans, our legislature and governor have refused to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, denying health insurance to the most vulnerable among us, allowing people to die. So it's somewhat hypocritical for you to cry out about violence when you pass violent policies. Simply because you do not like a black man in a White House. I'm trying to help us understand what's underneath this unrest. We know that while 54% of African American workers make less than a living wage, Governor McCrory signed the mean-spirited HB 2 that came out of Charlotte, a very progressive bill, which not only would write discrimination into state law against the LGBT community, but also forbids municipalities from passing living wage ordinances that would help and empower poor communities, African American, brown people, and poor whites, and protect children even in the workplace. That's, you got to know what's under the context. We know that our legislature, while touting an average increase in teacher pay, reduced total funding for public education and supported policies designed to undercut schools, like the very school that Keith Scott's daughter was coming home from on the bus when she lost her dad. We know that there has been an increase of funneling public money to private academies that do not serve everyone. And we know that low education and low wealth, according to a study at Columbia University, kills more people annually than heart attacks, strokes, and cancer. We know that there have been forces in this state that have fought to make it easier to get a gun than it is to vote. We know
this.
So true. There are many things about the Scott case we do not know. But there are a lot of injustices that we do know. And we know that the facts on the ground that are choking the life out of black, brown, and poor white communities. And this helps to see the deep anger and the hurt that we see in streets across this country. Some say we must condemn the unrest in Charlotte. As a pastor, as an organizer, I do not condone violence. I do not believe you can deal with violence and hate with hate.
That's right.
And I suspect that much of what we are seeing on the media about violence has been instigated by provocateurs, a small group who have their own agenda. But to condemn the pain in Charlotte or in Ferguson or any other city would be to condemn a man for kicking the water when somebody's trying to drown him. Whatever righteous indignation the public can muster ought to also be directed not only at the violence of a few, but toward the systems that are put in place by the many that create distrust and social political violence every day. Our people are facing DOTS, daily ongoing traumatic syndrome. That's what happens when you see people shot on camera over and over again, and you see health care and education and wages being taken out of your community. It creates daily ongoing traumatic syndrome. Now, lastly, I am a pastor. I will condemn violence until I leave this earth. The one I serve was violently profiled and killed by the state, which is why I also condemn the violence of the state. But I will not condemn grief. I was trained as a lifeguard some time ago, and I learned a long time ago that when people are drowning, their instincts can kill them, and anybody who tries to help them. If a lifeguard can get to a drowning person, the first thing the lifeguard says is stop struggling. Let me hold you up in this water so we can get to shore together. The riots of a few that we're witnessing in Charlotte are a kind of natural response of human beings who are drowning in systemic injustice. We must all pray that no one else gets hurt. We must condemn the violence. But we must call not just for peace, because that language can be tricky, but righteous, nonviolent, justice-seeking protest, which is a part of peace. Because if peace means be quiet, if peace means don't say anything, and we cannot have the media, when you see a black person or a brown person be loud, automatically suggest that's violent. We are against the violence. The violence in the street, tearing up property and hurting people, must stop. But the voice of protest and demanding transparency can never stop. We never want that to stop. Not in America, not in democracy, not in this world. And we must understand what's happening. Lastly, Brother Coates said, a society that protects some people through a system of schools, government, back home loans, and ancestral wealth, but can only protect you with the club of the criminal justice system, has either failed at enforcing its intentions or has succeeded in something much darker. Coretta Scott King, when asked about her husband being shot, said, wait a minute, there's something more violent than just my husband being shot. She said, poverty is violence. Yes. She said, starving a child is violence. Suppressing a culture is violence. Neglecting school children is violence. Working against working people and not paying them a living wage is violence. Yeah. Ghetto housing is violence. Yeah. Ignoring legitimate discontent is violence. Yeah. Taking health care is violence. And then she said, even a lack of willpower to do something about the violence that's hurting people is a sick and sinister form of violence. The unrest in Charlotte, the righteous nonviolent protest, the unrest in Charlotte is not about black people hating police. Look at the pictures. There are black and white and brown saying, hands up, don't shoot. It is not about black people hating police. It's about black, white, and brown people rising up against systems of injustice that protect officers who kill. That's what it's about. It's about saying we are against bad police because bad police make it good, bad for good police. Yeah. And we recognize that we need this kind of coalition. These are the homegrown leaders and prophets and ministers. They don't have to be helicoptered in. Listen to them. Listen to them, Mayor. Listen to them, Nation. Listen to them. They have something to say, not from the ivory towers of speculation or from the closed walls of a legislature or hiding behind the safety zones of a mansion, but they've been in the streets long before this happened, and they're going to stay there, and they are attempting to echo the hurt. Pain. And if we hear the sound of Rachel crying because her children are no more, perhaps that lament and the instructions out of that lament can turn us in a new direction and toward a better Charlotte and a better America.
Stand before you is the chair of the Charlotte Clergy Coalition for Justice. We are a multi-faith, multi-racial, multi-generational coalition of faith leaders that are serving in the Charlotte community. On Tuesday, we gathered in the streets with our community, bearing witness to the righteous rage, to the lament, to the pain that was a pulse throughout our community. We gathered knowing, serving in this community, I'm a pastor in this community, not only a chair of a coalition. We gathered knowing that Tuesday night did not begin on Tuesday night. Yesterday evening, We went back out into the streets with our community, with protesters, to once again bear witness, to be a faithful presence to the pain, to the lament, to the righteous rage, to the protest. We began at Little Rock, AME Zion, and from there we went to Marshall Park. Soon we knew that people were gathering, our people, the people we serve, were gathering throughout the city. And so the 40 clergy that came out wearing yellow armbands began to spread out into different places so they could be with our community. Some of our clergy went back to Little Rock. Some stayed at Marshall Park. Some went over to the police department. And some headed to the epicenter. The night began with such promise and beauty, seeing people, frankly, come together in our community in protest. We had children out there. We had young organizers, 18, 19, 20. We had seniors and elders in our community who knew the pain and felt it and bore witness to it. Early in the evening, the police were around in the community on bicycles and in uniforms. And then I received a text message from a colleague, please come to the epicenter. As I approached the epicenter with one of my colleagues, we saw that the police were there in riot gear lined up, and something in the air had changed. The police officers in riot gear were flanked on either side of Trade Street, and so we gathered with our community, with the protesters. And as we gathered with them, we took hands, and then the police began to walk toward us. They marched toward us, and they waited until people gathered around them. We were standing there, gathered around them. The same police, many of them, that we had spoken with the night before, that we had protected and promised that they would get home safely. And they did. We stood in front of them, staring at them in their eyes. But this time, there was not conversation. There was a line that was formed. The police moved from standing in front of us to standing to the side, forming a line of two officers, all in riot gear, with bully sticks out. We then gathered around the police again, once again with our community, and they marched down Trade. No command was given as the night before to move. No issue or instruction was given. They marched us down into the Omni. As they gathered, they put their backs to the glass door, and then we saw people begin to be struck with the clubs. We saw people falling and hitting the floor. We heard a shot. People began to run. It was chaos. I want to be clear, we came to be a presence for justice. Clergy, faith leaders, 40 of us in this city, out in the night. As soon as the shot was fired, we heard a smoke bomb. As soon as the smoke bomb was released, we heard some kind of light or sound bomb, a flash bomb, and then tear gas. We could not run out of there fast enough as the canisters were released out into us. People were dispersing. We were running. This is a city that made me a minister. It's the first place I've served. This is a city where I married my spouse, where I had my children. And now this is the city that tear gas me. Last night did not have to end like it ended. It did not have to end like it ended. We want to be clear about that. We have critical hours now as our city is being militarized. We praise the decision of leaders not to have a curfew, which we know would further militarize us.
Amen.
We are begging as faith leaders serving in this city for action that will de-escalate.
Yes.
Tonight, the end of tonight is not yet written. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
morning comes, if before it turns night, there's a decision that the videos will be released. Let's hear from our local president, Minister Corrine Manning.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being here. I am going to expound on Reverend Robin Tanner's testimony of the last 2 days, and then I will go further into how this work that we're doing began. Our clergy coalition was very intentional about our moral responsibility to this city and made a decision once we heard about Mr. Scott's death to go to the scene. On the very first night, we didn't simply try to protect the protesters, we tried to protect the police as well, because our responsibility is to all citizens. We thought that when someone swore to protect and serve and became a police officer, they too believed that their responsibility was to all citizens. But we've come to find out that African Americans too often are being killed. We realize that some people may be afraid, but our position is, if you are afraid, then you should not be a police officer. You can't be afraid of any specific or particular group of people.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Because we know that your fear could cause what we're getting now.
Yes.
Deaths.
Yes.
Of too many African-American men and women. More importantly, we see the disparity when our white sisters and brothers have an incident or an encounter with police. More times than not, they get to go home to their families.
Yes.
In fact, we've had incidents where a white male not only shot at cops, but shot cops. And they would shoot them in the arm or the leg, and that person was able to be arrested, but he or she is still alive. We can't say that about Keith Lamont Scott. His family will never see him again. I want us to remember this. For us, it's about that family. And for the leaders of this city to not have reached out to the family and extend their condolences is very disturbing to us. For our city and CMPD not to release the videos so that we all can see the truth, so we all can come to an understanding and possibly begin to heal, is very disturbing to us. We believe in truth and reconciliation. We believe that through transparency, we can get to the truth and then reconciliation. We believe that if we don't do it, who will do it? And so when we stand out there on the front line, arm in arm, as a human chain between the protesters and the cops, only to witness, eyewitness, a young black male being shot in the head and falling to the ground. Imagine the pain that we're all going through, but yet we still move forward because we love this city. We are calling on the mayor, we are calling on the governor, we are calling on the attorney general, the city council, the county commissioners, all to come together in a unified way to change the scope in which we're going in, because this is not good for anybody. A week ago, these same clergy, we were proud of the work we had done in collaboration with CMPD and began to build a bridge with CMPD. Most of you know we had many less talks to try to get all citizens an opportunity to talk to the police and deal with the police accountability issues we have in this city. But we too now are beginning to question the police department because of what we witness versus what we hear in the media today. The the counts are so far apart,
right.
It's like being in the Twilight Zone.
Mm.
We've got to do better than this. We've got to be better than this.
Amen.
And our humanity, whether you're black, white, Asian, Native American, straight, or homosexual, it is in jeopardy. Our humanity is in jeopardy. Now, to all my white sisters and brothers out there, I am calling on you to step up and stand up.
Amen.
And have true conversations about race in this country. About true conversations about race in this city.
Yes.
Because when we become number 50 in the country regarding upability for black people, there is a problem here in Charlotte.
That's right.
It looks beautiful on the outside, but honey, it's not beautiful on the inside. Whether you hold position in your church, whether you go to church or you don't, to stand with us. Unite as one. Because we can't lose. We cannot lose. And we do not want to see another person die in the street. It should not be tolerated. To the police chief, who we worked very closely with in the past, shame on you. Shame on you. We don't want to hear another person stand up and give an account as if it's factual until we all see those tapes. It's imperative that the citizens of Charlotte feel safe and feel respected. Hear me. I said citizens, meaning all citizens, not just some citizens. And I thank you in advance because I know after you finish hearing our account, of what we believe in and what we stand for, you will stand with us. God bless you.
Here is local leadership. And we have two big announcements at the end, so we want you to hold on. But this is why we need the narrative to come from the ground, to come from here. And we want to reiterate, Governor, we heard the governor say last night on TV, well, it's the mayor and the DA's responsibility about to take. If the governor can get involved in sending the troopers down here, the governor can say, I made a mistake of signing a bill that denies me, but that bill hasn't gone into law yet. The governor, we want to hear from you, the AG, the mayor, the DA, all of them, and Peter Ware is going to deal with that, but we want to hear from them. These tapes.
Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Again, today's date is September the 21st. That was a press conference that took place yesterday. I was watching it live on television when they just lost the feed in the middle of Mrs. Mack's testimony and her account that you just heard her give. Again, there's about maybe an hour's worth more of that video. So if you want to watch it, it is posted on the program page for today, Black Talk Radio News, and of course it'll be there for the podcast. Please share that video because it is very important. It is very important that the people, the masses of people, know the truth about what is going on in Charlotte. I mean, to be expected, but as I've been monitoring social media and news media reports, I'm seeing a lot of disinformation. I'm seeing a lot of the same old racist talking points from conservatives about this situation. You know, nothing productive whatsoever. And we know that was to be expected. But the fact is that you have a very diverse group of thousands of people who are protesting in the streets. Again, you had a North Carolina representative, Pittenger. I forget Pittenger's first name. I think he might be actually in a district that covers Charlotte. But he came out and said, oh, this is about black people hating police. Nothing could be further from the truth. But we know that the state GOP hates black people, hates gay people, just hates people, period. Hates poor people. Hates workers, hates the environment, just so full of hate on so many levels. So that's what's going on here in North Carolina. It's just a continuation of the policies that are not leading to justice in the state of North Carolina. And of course, we're seeing this play out all over the country. I do want to play some more of that video, but I do want to give anyone with a question or comment opportunity to give us a call. 641-715-3660, participant code 549-032 pound, hit *6 and 1 to come in on air. I took a couple of notes. Before I get to those notes, let me say this. I believe Charlotte and some of the surrounding areas have very competent leadership. You just heard from a couple of the grassroots leadership in Charlotte, North Carolina. Because I've had people contacting me. A lot of people think I live in Charlotte. I don't. I used to. I still have family in Charlotte, but my ancestral home is outside of Charlotte in the rural county of Gaston County. We're just across the river. But I, again, have family, have friends in Charlotte, people work in Charlotte. I made a lot of friends in Charlotte. So, I'm very confident in the leadership of the grassroots leadership, because I've had people contacting me saying, like, they want to come in and you know, help us with these issues or whatnot. Again, I am not a civil rights organization. I'm not a civil rights activist. I believe in human rights. I'm a practicing pan-Africanist, meaning that I believe in the economic and cooperation of black people, Afro-descendant people all over the planet, no matter where they are. Cooperation in all areas of people activity. Okay, but I am the president of a nonprofit media organization. Our job is to report the facts as they may be. Our job is to agitate on these airways for justice. It is not my job to meet with people coming in from out of the state to tell people in Charlotte, North Carolina, what they ought to be doing. They got competent leadership. So I just want to put that out there. Some of the notes that I took. The curfew was actually implemented last night, but it was not enforced for the most part. They still allow people who were out there purposely after midnight who were technically in violation of the curfew that the Charlotte mayor put in place. But for the most part, the police did not enforce it. Dots. Now, I made a note about dots is because Reverend Barber spoke about something I have spoke about when he talked about people suffering from dots. We know specifically among the black activist community that there's this new term, or I don't know how new or old it is, but of post-traumatic stress disorder, saying a lot of black people is suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder from slavery. And although I would say that slavery is a fact, has never been abolished. 13th Amendment left it in place. Go read the Constitution. But I have never been in slavery. My little brother was enslaved. I have never been enslaved. I had a cousin enslaved. I have never been enslaved. And I don't have any kind of genetic memories of any black person in our family tree that may have been enslaved, but I'm not sure that any of them were. Again, I am not one of those black people that will tell you that we're all descendants of enslaved Africans. Not that there's something wrong with that. Not that there's to be some shame tied to that, but I know that black people have always been on this continent, okay, played a critical role in the creation of this nation, also of this state, and what have you. So I don't have post-traumatic stress because the stress that I feel is ongoing. And that's what he was talking about. I thought that was important that we use the proper language, because when you say post-traumatic stress disorder, you're talking about something that happened to you in the past. That's what post means. This is the after effect of a traumatic event. And we live daily in this country suffering traumatic events. And again, slavery was never abolished, so there's nothing post about slavery in this country. We heard Minister Corinne Mack mention, cops protecting and serving, and it doesn't seem like they're protecting and serving. Again, I will point you to the 2005 Supreme Court decision where you had some slave catchers who were being sued, who came up with a defense saying, well, it's not our job. It's not in our job description to protect and serve citizens. And the Supreme Court agreed with them that it is not the police job to protect and serve. Their job is solely to enforce laws, even if that means enforcing unjust laws like many of them do. Unjust laws. They are enforcing modern day slavery, hence why I refer to them as slave catchers from time to time. I noticed that Keith Lamont Scott's name was mentioned several times during that press conference. Before today's program, I was watching news coverage of the governor of North Carolina, Pat McCrory, Republican, watching his press conference. And he know everybody is tuning in to his press conference because they want to hear about the events of Charlotte. He want to try to make it about flooding in the eastern part of North Carolina, where I have heard no reports of anyone losing their lives. Just one town that is underwater, so to speak, but nobody died or anything. And he spent a lot of time praising slave catchers in the National Guard and how they conducted themselves and what have you. A lot of praise for the slave catchers in protecting property, that's what he specifically mentioned. They did a great job protecting property. Because, again, the Supreme Court has ruled that they don't protect and serve citizens. He did not one time mention Keith Scott's name. Not one time. And the mainstream media was getting frustrated with him because they cut away from him. And they was like, well, he talking about the floods and this. So we're going to cut away. And even Don Lemon noticed and said, you know what? He could have at least said the man's name. He could have at least acknowledged the grief of his family. He didn't say a word about the man. Nothing. He talked about some issues, but I'm not sure what he meant by the word issues. What issues are going on in Charlotte? Pat McCrory. But I just thought it was very telling that he could not even bring himself to say this man's name. So I'm going to allow you to listen to the rest of this broadcast of this press conference so that you can hear from people on the ground. And again, I will say, these grassroots leaders that you've been hearing from, if you had an opportunity to see the video, They've been mobilizing against on racial issues and police accountability issues for a very long time. They just ain't showed up because of the latest shooting. Dr. Barber has been traveling all over the state addressing slave catching and pointing out that it not only affects black folks, but it's affecting poor white people here in North Carolina that's getting gunned down in their homes by slave catchers. So, this, you know, I'm just competent in the grassroots leadership of these people, and I don't have anything other to add to that. I don't have any suggestions for them. Nothing. So I don't know what somebody who don't even live here in this state think they gonna come in and suggest. I think these people know their community far better and know the issues far better than anybody coming in from the outside. Not that I'm saying people shouldn't come in and show their support. I'm just saying North Carolina has its own leadership on the grassroots level. All right. So we don't have anybody in queue that has any questions or comments, so I'm just going to let this video play out until Tando Radio Show comes on air at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Again, this is a press conference led by the North Carolina NAACP, but also other organizations were represented there as well, mostly dealing with the clergy in Charlotte. So let's go ahead and continue to listen on.
I am Dr. Peter Inquiry. I'm the senior pastor here at Mayfield Memorial Missionary Baptist Church. I'm also a member of the executive team of the Charlotte Clergy Coalition for Justice. I'm also the current moderator of the 70 churches of the United Missionary Baptist Association. I am here tonight to co-sign the things that you've heard thus far and to lament that this weekend has been characterized by, in my view, a number of missed opportunities. We missed an opportunity to be the change we want.
That's right.
When at our press conference, Chief's press conference on yesterday morning, at which I was present, almost immediately, Mr. Scott was characterized as a gunman. Mm-hmm. And nearly in the same sentence, it was expressed that we don't have all the facts. We don't have enough information. Appealing to the citizenry not to jump to hasty conclusions. Immediately, the narrative, which has been generated by, according to Chief Putney, the officers on the ground and unnamed citizens nearby, some facts were stipulated to that Mr. Scott brandished a gun, that he threatened police. If, in fact, we don't know everything, how can these things be pronounced with such sure-footedness? So my purpose here tonight is to call for the videos to be released.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Moreover, I want to call upon the governor, the attorney general, the mayor, the city council, the prosecutor, everyone in the legal structure of our city to pronounce where they stand.
Yes. That's
right. With regard to the release of this citizen-owned footage.
Yes, our video.
We own those videos.
Yes, we do.
We paid for them.
Yes, that's right.
So today, if those videos are released, That is one tangible olive branch to a community that is embroiled in inexplicable pain. Pain that has been expressed to us over these last days, as if people, citizens, some citizens, black citizens of Charlotte, live under an occupation army. This has been expressed before a state of emergency was declared.
That's right.
So this release would be a gesture of good faith that, in fact, transparency is important. Moreover, in the press conference on yesterday, with my own ears, protestations to the contrary notwithstanding, I heard Chief Putney declare that while there were body cams on the uniformed officers at the scene, a number of them did not have them activated.
That's a crime.
I would argue, and I would dare speak for some in this room, to demand that if that is in fact the case, those individuals be fired. And the truth shall make you free. Yes.
Okay, I'm going to pause it right there as I've been watching Chief Putney, as I've been able to monitor as much as possible some of the coverage coming out of Charlotte. And I just heard him say, you know, because I had watched this video before, so when it was playing the parts that I heard before, I was watching the television. And I heard Chief Putney say, since the wife was recording her video, again, this is a woman who was out there. It was her husband. She begging for his life, saying he had a traumatic brain injury, said he had just taken some medication, saying that he didn't have a gun and not to kill him. There was no attempt to use her to de-escalate the situation, to clear up any kind of confusion with her husband, who was where he is normally every day when he's waiting on his child to get off the bus. All right. But she has released a video, and I don't see anything, and the video's very shaky. I can imagine she was shaking as they're about to murder her husband. And so in the video, at no time do I see any kind of furtive movements, any kind of jerky movements, any kind of movements toward the police that make them feel like they was in danger. I didn't see a hand come up pointing a gun at them. In fact, I never saw a gun on the ground. I saw somebody drop something on the ground that people are saying looks like a gun, but the cop dropped that on the ground. The video clearly shows that, and I will give Don Lemon credit for pointing that out. So again, I have confidence in the grassroots leadership that is being provided in Charlotte, and I just don't have anything critical to say about them whatsoever. So I do have plenty of critical things to say about the governor, who doesn't even care enough about this man's family or anything to even mention his name during a press conference. And as you will hear from some of these other people in this video, if you choose to go watch it, that a lot of stuff that you're hearing reported by these corporate news outlets, and these people were out there in the streets. They weren't watching it on TV or nothing. They were out there in the midst of this and saying that they were attacked by police, fired upon with tear gas, as the one minister gave her, as they trying to de-escalate. The slave catchers were escalating. So definitely going to keep an eye on this. Try to make my way to Charlotte tomorrow, since I'm not doing any broadcasting, and see if I can talk to some of my contacts on the ground. I've reached out to some of my contacts in the NAACP, see if we can get Sister Corinne Mack on next week, and I will continue to watch this. But with that said, as we come to a conclusion of this program, it's coming up over the weekend. Lots of things. I say this every Friday. Be careful, because a lot of people use substances where they may not be thinking properly, may not have the best judgment. So if you got to be out there, if you like to go out over on the weekend and you're around other people that you don't know, you got to keep your head on a swivel. All right, you got to practice defensive living. You got to develop battlefield awareness. Not going to guarantee that you won't get killed like a dog in the street, like Mr. Keith Lamont Scott, but at least you can decrease the likelihood of that happening to you if you are aware of your surroundings. So y'all be safe over the weekend, and I will be back on air Monday with another broadcast of Black Talk Radio News. Stay tuned, as Tando Radio Show is coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern.